Well, the 12th season of the Park City Sunday Market has wrapped for another year. In the studio with a recap, I have Executive Director Kate McChesney along with Operations Director Michelle McDonald. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
So, Kate, start with you. A good year?
Wow, yeah. Pop the champagne. Absolutely. We survived. Yeah, 12th season. It was a fantastic year.
Yeah.
It really was.
So did you get all 14 weeks in?
We did. We did, yeah. We had the three off, and the three off were for Kimball Arts Fest, Tour of Utah, and then No Event Weekend. And then after that, we had the last five and went through this past Sunday.
Yeah, so how did that work for you? I'm guessing for the staff, it was probably nice to have, you know, most of August
First
off.
Time ever we actually had a weekend off. Because those 2 weeks, our crew goes to help with the county fair. So that third week actually gave us a chance to go camping, relax, do something fun for ourselves.
Yeah, it was actually
enjoy
really
someone
nice.
Else's event.
Right. Yeah, true.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of what you've shown everybody, that you guys are more than just a silly market. You're really event producers.
We help a lot behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize everything that we're doing. So you saw me quite a bit, actually. That was interesting.
Well, that was with Park City Institute.
Park City Institute. Up. Yeah. Right. We also help program the 4th of July. We help with Miners Day with the Recycle, the Tour of Utah with the Recycle. I also helped with the soccer tournament that was here in town. And, you know, even right now, I've got people asking us to borrow, whether or not it's our bike valet or our sandbags or A-frames, tents,
our
tables,
zero waste team.
So, right. And they're so excited to help. And so are we. You know, I mean, we don't want to just be our event. We want everybody to realize that we're everywhere else, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you have the staff, though, to spread yourself? I mean, that's a lot of events.
Luckily, most of those kind of line up just almost just right. There were a couple with the concerts that
we were had some
tight fits, and we were sending some of the team off from Silly to go get prepped for another event, but it worked out pretty well.
It's one of those things, if somebody asks for our help, we want to be right there. And that's really, for us, that was the bigger picture, is just to make it work. And Silly, you know, it's always going to be our first priority. But at the same token, everybody else is a good priority. They're all nonprofits as well, just like us. So we want to divvy it out when we can.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about numbers. I mean, you've been hitting the 10,000 mark easily, I guess, for the past few years.
We just did a recap. I literally did this yesterday. And we're up about 8% from last year, 193,000 people over 14 Sundays.
Wow. So divide that for me.
That's somewhere around just shy of 14.
Yeah, we averaged around 14. There are obviously some big days in there where that number is 19, and closing day was about 11.
Mm-hmm.
So it varies in there, but it's a big number.
Yeah. We did 1,650 people at the bike valet. We also were able to get great numbers from the high school for parking counts, and we parked anywhere between 160 to over 200 cars every Sunday. So the whole walk, bike, hike, take the bus.
Message is
definitely getting out there. And then, well, with the parking, too, being paid parking, you know, that really helped people to go, oh, maybe I should have listened to that sign as I was driving into town.
I think it may have motivated locals a little more.
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
That's what I was going to say. I certainly noticed more cars in the high school parking lot than ever before. So it was basically, we just don't want to pay, and yeah.
Right.
But that was actually probably helpful for you, right? Though, so that people who did want to come park for a few hours.
Absolutely.
You could find
absolutely.
A spot.
Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Instead of looping around Old Town.
Well, and there are people who really do just want to come to the farmer's market, get their produce for the day, park for 10 or 15 minutes, which they still can. There was still accessible parking right here by the station. Pop over there and then just leave, you know. So it's nice to keep that convenient.
Yeah. Any changes, though, with parking along Park Avenue there? Because I think that's probably where the most complaints would come from. People just can't even park in front of their own house on Sundays.
Well, they can, but they don't.
Right.
Is actually part of that statistic, because we have the whole west side of the street is residential parking.
Only.
Yeah.
So we can do the east side of the street.
We didn't hear about any complaints in the moment if somebody's hanging on to
an issue we haven't heard about. We go to the HPCA meetings, and we're at the CAC, whatever it is now. We were at all those meetings, so we attended to try to make sure we were either in the communication or helping with the situation, helping with the problem. So that's what we're always trying to do, be ahead of the game.
Okay. The market's still considered eco-friendly? I mean, at 1 year, I mean, it was like you didn't have much going to the landfill at all.
Right. So what ended up happening, so Michelle handles all the vendors, and so she's, gosh, God love her, she really straps down and says, like, hey, you know, no, anything from ketchup packets to salt and pepper packets or, you know, anything needs to just be recyclable. So if you look at our recycling number, it goes down, but it's also because everybody's using more compostable. So compostable containers, plates, napkins, forks and knives. So those now will go to the landfill, but they'll end up getting, you know, composting a lot quicker.
Right.
But after all is said and done, yes, we still fed the pigs. Let's see.
Oh, the pigs were happy.
The pigs were happy. Oh, right there. 12,760 pounds of food went to the pigs. And that's us taking the food every Monday. And then other than that, we had just about a 75% diversion rate. And that's, again, you know, us trying to get smarter with not make it so laborious for us, but more laborious for the vendor.
And this, just a note, because I don't like 75%. I like 80, 85. I'd like 90. But we measure in weight, which isn't, it would really be volume normally. So recycling is much lighter than
anything
trash
else
that's going to the landfill.
Right.
You know, so it's not a perfect number, but we're very proud of it.
Yeah. And then let's talk a little bit about, I mean, did you have any big changes from years past this year, or is pretty much same old thing?
The bollards. Those were interesting. 4,300 pounds of bollards that we put out every morning and then took back every afternoon. That was fun. Just when our team thought that they couldn't take on a whole lot more, that was an interesting. But that was also something, again, the city asked for our help and said, we don't have the manpower to get this done every morning and every night. Do you think your team could be the ones to install those and then take those out? So that was a good time. We did that for the last six markets. We finally got it all figured out by the last one, but everybody was very safe. So
I was going to say, flex those muscles.
Yeah. We got our upper body workout. We had some good, we had a great new partnership with Nuzzles this year, Nuzzles & Co. We had them participate in the venue. We did two full adoption days with them, opening day and closing day, and then we had five
Snuggle pits.
Yeah. I mean, I love the total number of adoptions we got from them.
Let's see. There was six this past, four the weekend before, and then we had a two, a one, and a one. So what is that? Whatever that is. Somewhere around 10 or 11. We ended up for the entire season. And then we went and did a whole, went and helped them in bring animals in one day. So that was really nice.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the contract that you have with Park City. I think you've got a 3-year contract, so this would be
year one. We have two more to go.
And that was helpful. I know that was something that you had.
You just like to breathe. You know, you just like to breathe. It's like buying a house. You just want to know that you're going to be there for as long as you possibly can.
Well, and our team knows that we're going to need them again another year. We're not on the hunt year by year.
Right.
Trying to find staff. We have good staff right now, and
yeah, they're looking.
We
forward
can
to
keep
back.
Them on lockdown.
Yeah, we talked to Jenny last week, and it's already, you know, let's talk more about the future and just kind of really lock it down.
Well, and certainly that's something the city council has on their agenda for Thursday in terms of the changes to the special events. Part of that has to do with fees. I think you guys have already seen a reduction in terms of the help. That could be cut even more.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, right now we're tied in for our next 2 years, but exactly, they're really looking at a lot of the fees. And I know that if they start cutting fees, not even necessarily for our event, but for a lot of events, they'll just go away. You know, I mean, these fees are huge pieces of what we're doing. And, you know, again, we're all nonprofits and, you know, we'll struggle, but, you know, we want to stay on the street. We want to stay helping businesses and helping the community and
part of that ties in with the contract, too. That contract does give us the ability to plan and see what other options we can lock in. Also, to sustain ourselves as those reductions are put in place.
Yeah. How much do you receive?
I want to say, let's see, we were at 76 minus 16, somewhere around 60,000 over the course of 14 Sundays.
And that will go down consistently to zero, I'm guessing, yeah?
I would hope not. Only because, I mean, that's, you know, $60,000. That's a salary in the big scheme of things. And then as well, when the city asks us to do anything, when I say we jump, we jump. And I would hope that just all of the help that we give with all the other nonprofits and all the other events that are happening here in town and just continually, you know, being a team player, that would account for something. We also lead the way with all the other events with recycling and bike valet and parking at the high school. We started all that. We started that. Which people,
not because they asked us
not
to
because
or
they
told
asked
us
to. Or told us to. We did that. Now it's expected of us. But we you know, that was part of our big, huge, sustainable issues.
Okay. Okay. Anything else you want to say about this summer season?
I did a quick recap of our vendors, and just shy of 30% of our vendors this summer were Summit County residents, and of those, 80% were Park City zip codes.
That's awesome.
I thought it was a cool stat.
I think just thank you to the community. I know sometimes, you know, we feel a little large, and we just wanted to really say thank you. Everybody came out definitely on the first and the last, which is those are our big parties for the locals, and so just really thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Well, talk to you
Thanks,
next spring.
Leslie.
I guess you've got the we'll talk to
holiday
you
holiday bazaar.
Holiday
yeah,
bazaar.
We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back. No worries.
Kate McChesney and Michelle McDonald again from Park City Sunday Market. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council meets tomorrow, starting in work session at 5:30 in the studio with a rundown of the agenda. I have Park City Manager Diane Foster along with Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, the council will be spending about an hour and a half in closed session. Property, personnel, litigation, or all of the above. Can you give us an update with regard to Deputy City Attorney Polly McLean? Is she still on the payroll?
She is on paid administrative leave, and we haven't heard it. There's nothing that's changed. So we haven't changed that status, and we always have the ability to do that.
Yeah. In terms of how her not being there is affecting the office, I mean, who's taken over her cases? Have we had to go out and hire part-time people, or are we just using our interns? Or
so for the Planning Commission meeting, City Attorney Mark Harrington was able to get Jody Burnett to step in there, and he's very experienced. He was person who helped the Planning Commission through the whole treasure process, and he's very familiar with our community. So we were quite fortunate that he was available, the rest of the team is, including City Attorney Mark Harrington, is picking up.
So they're busy.
They are quite busy, they are attentive to, no significant increase in cost to the taxpayer.
Okay. Are cases not getting prosecuted, though, as a result? Because that was another part of her job, wasn't it, as a city prosecutor?
No, that's Tricia Lake does that. Polly has worked historically mostly on planning issues. And so Mark, having been quite familiar with those and involved in quite a lot of those, has picked up all of those. So he is quite busy. And specifically because of the situation, we've been extra attentive to making sure that the pending applications, plats, and those kind of things all are not slowed down at all.
Okay. At 5:30, the City Council will get the city tour debrief. It seems like most of you were on the trip, or certainly a lot of council and staff members. So this is, who are we debriefing?
Well, this is the first time for me in recent memory that all of our elected officials went, and all but one of the county elected officials went. And, you know, I think the one takeaway that people haven't talked about from City Tour is that the relationship between the city and county. We heard from the folks in Bozeman, as well as the county heard from the folks in Gallatin County, that they can't be in the room together. And that's significant. And all indications are that there was just a single issue that was dividing them. And we didn't actually get a download of exactly what that was, but we had some hints. But the reality is it was tainting the entire relationship. And we have a fantastic relationship with Summit County. I participated yesterday morning in a three-hour meeting on transit to refine the proposals for the Ecker Hill Park and Ride, as well as look at some of the Camas commuter tweaks that they want to make, all positive tweaks. I don't want to worry anyone. But we have a great relationship, and occasionally we'll have issues that we don't agree on and we'll fight it out, but it doesn't tank our whole relationship. So I've been, you know, that was one of the things you have to remember from City. One of the things we got from City Tour, and as you'll see in the appendix, one of the summary takeaways right at the top of that page there, Leslie, is we're doing all right as a community, and it's important to share that message and remind ourselves that we're fortunate and to be kind and humble.
Who'll be presenting this? Will Miles be doing the presentation, or members of the leadership class? Or?
I believe Miles will be leading this. I don't know if Kilo Zamora, who facilitated this debrief, I don't know if he'll be there or not. And this is also an opportunity for council to be able to highlight if there are any things that they found particularly interesting, or if they want us to go talk to a nonprofit about a program we saw. You know, as you've heard Miles say, there over the years, there are so many things that we've taken away from City Tour and specifics that we can point to in our community and say, that was a result of City Tour. And they're not all things that, importantly, not all things that the government does. We have so many nonprofit leaders and the leadership class. You know, many of the people, they changed the role in the community. I was part of leadership class 11, and I had a different perspective on, I was in the private sector then, and it helped me to actually look at city government.
In the debrief report, it said at one point that there are many ways to get community input. Are there ways, though, that you learned that maybe Park City hasn't tried and something we should look at?
There was one called Seat at the Table, and it was basically a series of community dinners. And it wasn't government sitting at every table. It was bringing people together. It was kind of a version of the Neighborhood Project, but it was a specific day where everyone is sitting down and having dinner and inviting people that maybe they don't know. And I actually signed up for that the event hasn't happened yet. And Linda Jaeger is actually looking at it as maybe that's one of the things we can add to the community visioning process.
Okay. Let's see. The voter information pamphlet for November's ballot with regard to the Treasure and Armstrong property purchase, it's not available for download until today. So what can you tell me about it?
I believe that both a pro and a con have been submitted by community members. I believe that they can also do a rebuttal, and I believe that the pro group may have missed the rebuttal by about 12 hours, so that may not appear. They may choose to put that in the paper or something else. But so the city, we do the piece about the informational piece, and that's one that's been public as part of the bond hearings.
So this will be mailed out?
This one, I believe, gets mailed out with the ballots. I believe that they're dropping around October 18th. I think that's how it is. I'm not 100% sure. And if that's not true, I will get back to you.
Okay. Jenny, under old business, the City Council will consider approving an ordinance amending special events. So what are we proposing here?
So we have about six major changes that we are looking to propose. I think the really important thing here that we are looking to do is to create better balance, more predictability, and better event management. I think it's really important to mention that over 3 years, really, we've been working with SEAC and the community and a bunch of stakeholders to get feedback. And then really since May and June, early this summer, really started conversations, and it became very clear on where we should be going with special events. And again, to talk a little bit about the predictability and the balance in the event calendar and how much has changed over the last 3 years, we are looking to clearly define peak time periods. And so we have, I think off the top of my head, probably about 11 times during the year when we are at our peak, where there are busiest times, whether that's Sundance Film Festival or Arts Festival, 4th of July. And we want applicants, when they come to us, and we want our community to know that during that time, we're not really looking to consider any more new events during that time. There may be, over the next couple of years, as things shake out, some events that are existing on the calendar that end up being those weekends. But again, better predictability for our community, and specifically with regards to transportation and public safety on that point.
is a good one. We're also reclassifying event levels. So right now we have a 1, 2, and 3 events, level events. And we've done a little bit better job at clarifying, not solely basing those on attendance, but again, looking at the transportation and public safety impacts and those impacts that are caused on our community. So an example there is the level 5 will be something like a Sundance Film Festival and Arts Festival. A level 4 might be Savor the Summit. And kind of the smaller events, the level 1, 2s, and 3s would perhaps be like the local Park City baseball tournament that just happened this past summer, or Walk a Mile in the Shoes. So just really being able to classify those a little bit better. Go ahead.
Back to the events calendar. I mean, can somebody still get on that calendar? And when are the deadlines for that?
So that's another change we are looking to make, are the deadlines for submission. Right now, we have a rolling deadline, and so any day of the week, we can get an application and start processing that. It's a 90-60 or 30-day deadline. We are wanting to slow that process down, and so we're looking at 3 times a year. I don't know them off the top of my head right now. But that's for the level 3, 4, and 5 events. Those are the larger events that have a little bit of public safety and transportation impacts. We're going to be taking those in 3 times a year and then have about a 2 or 3 month process to get those approved kind of in what I'm calling chunks or groups of those, so that we can have a better look at the process. And a difference there is events can apply actually 18 months ahead. So that's a year and a half ahead. A lot of times immediately following the event, whether it's Arts Festival or Ragnar or another sporting tournament, they want to start marketing right away. And we want to get ahead of that, work with those applicants and reward them for knowing what they want to do in advance. And then work with those smaller community events. Again, the level 1s and 2s have a 30-day window that they need to submit those deadlines.
Okay. And then when you talk about the Sundance Film Festival, I mean, part of that is the Slam Dance Festival. I mean, are they going to be impacted by this at all?
So Slam Dance is not an event. It's within a brick-and-mortar business, and so we don't permit that activity. It's something I think that happens up at Treasure. Again, Sundance is all-encompassing and across the city and the county, and that is a big one for that event, of course.
Okay. Let's see. So at the 2 resorts, then, they basically don't need city approval unless it's a level 4 or 5 event?
Unless it's a level 4 or 5 event. So again, those are the events that have larger attendance, usually over 1,000 people. It would create some, could be moderate to, you know, more than moderate transportation impacts. Those are the events that we want to be regulating at the resorts. The smaller events, my example is up at Deer Valley this summer, there was an event called Mountain Bike Munchies that there were some food trucks up there for some mountain biking activities. We don't need to be permitting stuff like that. The resort has the staff and the venue and the parking and all of that they need to do that type of activities. And we want to do what we can to facilitate that type of activity.
Okay. I believe staff's also recommending that businesses or events are giving 5 years to adjust their events in a way that no more fee waivers. So talk to me a little bit about that.
So we have about a 5-year time period where we want to work with events to wean them off of fee waivers. And so this is something we've been balancing for a while. A couple years ago, we were getting those all the time, just like we're getting event applications all the time, and we slowed it down and said you can apply 2x a year. This is the next step of that, and saying, hey, we're going to work with you for 5 years. We want to make sure that you're properly budgeted in order to understand the city service fees that you may incur, and there's also hard costs outside of the city that applicants also occur. We want to make sure you're budgeted and know that you can support this type of event. A balance in that is that we know a lot of our applicants are local nonprofit organizations, and so that's why this one's going to take some time. I think it's really important to mention we do have our next round of fee reduction due on October 1st, which is this coming Monday. We don't want to start this until fiscal year 20, so that's all events starting July 1, 2019, that will start implementing this 5-year process.
Okay. How much money are we going to save in 5 years? How much more money will be in the budget as a result of not issuing fee waivers?
So, you know, I think over the next couple of years, as we start to reduce that and understand the budgets of these events and work with the applicants, we'll have a better understanding of that. I do think it's important right now. We do have a $200,000 limit for special events department specifically. What I can't promise is that all of a sudden we're going to have $200,000. I think it's going to be a balance between that. And another part of this step is just being clear in that we are looking for events like Miner's Day and 4th of July and Halloween. We want to make clear agreements on those city services because those are really important cultural events to our community, and we don't want to see things like that go away as well.
So there are some events that will continue to receive city assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these will happen for those that will no longer receive some fee waivers. That'll be happening over 5 years. It's not like it's we're telling you now you've got 5 years and then it's totally cut off. We're going to start.
I think each of the events will be a little bit different, but I do think it'll be a an approach that we wean them off over that 5-year approach, and again work with the applicants to really understand their needs and their concerns based on the event and based on their nonprofit and the activities that they are looking to do.
Okay, the Silly Girls brought up this. I hadn't thought about this in terms of just like the bollards. I mean, if somebody's having an event on Main Street, they're responsible then for putting those up.
So that was an agreement we made with Silly Market, and I did, I heard them on the radio, and I can't say enough. I mean, they really pitched in with not only the city team but the community this year, whether it was helping Terry and doing a number of other things. They've led the charge on sustainability and transportation issues and tried to find all of the ways that they can, align with the community's goals. But bollards are something, and I think that's the other part of the balance. I mean, bollards were new this year and a definite public safety need, and specifically on Lower Main Street with the number of events that we are having down there. And they were willing to jump in and pitch in and help do some of those things. While we are also trying to bring the cost down as far as fee reduction, there is a cost going up with regards to public safety and transportation. So that is a balance. And as some of those new programs and things come on, city services come on, that'll be another conversation we're having with event applicants.
Okay. What do you think people else need to know?
I think just as important as we've done a bunch of outreach leading up to these code changes, I think we're going to have to do just as much outreach after them. And so I think the education process is not over and it's really just beginning. We are going to take some time to update our website and do additional community outreach specifically to applicants and also the community about these changes so that everyone is aware. And really, I mean, for anyone and everyone out there, all of the work with the departments in the city and in the county and all of our jurisdictional partners in the community, businesses, I mean, really where we are today is thanks to everyone who's been a part of this.
Okay.
And this is a culmination of 2 or 3 years worth of work with the Special Events Advisory Committee, or SEAC, council forming that because they heard that the community was concerned about events. One of the great outcomes of SEAC was figuring out that it wasn't the event itself, it was the impact of the events. And so Jenny and Jonathan and their team jumped on that. And I think from Sundance to events this summer, everyone feels like, okay, it was better, right? It's easier to get to Arts Fest because of the bus-only lanes. The focus, I mean, Sundance this year, the having the White or the Electric Express as the backbone really helped out the transit team, even though they didn't have all Resort Express this year. You know, there are so many examples of where this team has made changes. This is a significant step for City Council. They made a commitment to the community that they would better manage events. And 2 weeks ago, we went to Council, and Jonathan Weidenhammer said to Council, look, you can go halfway or you can do all of these things. And Council said, we want to see all of them. Now, they can always come back, and if something's not working perfectly, they can make a tweak to it. But I think when you look at the start of the community said, we're concerned about events, and this is the City Council's response that says, we heard you, and we're really doing things about it. So it's a, while it's in some ways a step in the process, it's a big step.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I do just want to quickly remind people it is the last weekend. If you want to help with Emily Herr's project in China Bridge, you can just go online on our website and sign up for that. The lower level will be completed by the end of next week, so check that out if you can. And then just a quick mention, the next 2 weekends for events out at Quinn's Junction and Round Valley, we do have some trail events this Friday and Saturday and next Friday and Saturday. Charlie will be in, I think, on Friday to talk about that, but just a heads up if you're planning to hit the trails this weekend.
Okay. Jenny and Diane, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. October is Dyslexia Awareness Month, and PC Reads has an event coming up to tell us about it. I have from PC Reads, Alyssa Eaton and Christy Marsh. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So maybe, Alyssa, you can start as one of the co-founders of PC Reads. Just talk a little bit about who you are and what you do. I mean, it started about 5 years ago, I think.
Yes. We've talked to you several times, so this is great to have another opportunity. We are really, our mission is to advocate, educate, and support families of struggling readers. And at this point, we're quite well-structured in that we provide scholarships to teachers who want to learn more about how to teach reading. We have an advocacy program where certified advocates meet with families and help them understand tutoring and testing and help them obtain services in school. And we have a youth program called MIND for kids grades K through 12. They meet four times a year, and we work on self-advocacy skills, assistive technology, and really just try to build their self-esteem and let them know that they're not alone.
Yeah, I mean, the organization came to be because you just felt like you weren't getting the help that you needed within the school district, but I think some changes have been made.
Oh, definitely, yes. And, you know, the whole dyslexia initiative that has brought a different reading curriculum into the school called Wilson Foundations, and this year the addition of four new interventionists in the district, which was much needed, and where the district is also training interventionists in Wilson Reading System, which is a year-long practicum, and that will benefit the children that need additional intervention in the school.
Now, just at its last board meeting, the school board approved a K-3 early literacy program. Did your organization have any input into that?
Not specifically. That was kind of a, from what I understand, having spoken to Julie Hastings yesterday just a short time about that, that really is just a required step from the state now. It was always embedded in the law, and they just made it a more formal process to say, we want to know what the schools are doing, tell us, and approve it.
So basically, I think what we've learned about reading is that what works for one kid may not work for another, especially if he or she has some kind of disability, reading disability. So how many reading programs do we have? I mean, you mentioned the Wilson. We've got...
Well, the district, and I'm probably not the best person to answer this, the district has, you know, a reading curriculum. And Wilson Foundations is just a piece of it that really hits the phonics and phonemic awareness. It's 30 minutes of instruction a day. So the teachers are still working on building comprehension and vocabulary. You know, there's still work on, you know, a full English language arts curriculum, which includes writing and spelling. So there's still a lot. It's more comprehensive than that. It's just one piece. The nice thing is that Wilson Foundations is shown to benefit all students. So even though, as you said, different students need different things, and some kids may come into school already knowing how to read, this program should benefit all students and make all improve their reading, writing, and spelling.
All right. So you've got an event coming up October 1st. Tell me about that. You want to talk, Christine?
Dean. He's coming October 1st, and he'll be speaking at the Park City High School Lecture Hall from 6:30 to 7:30, and then he will be open for questions afterwards.
Who's Dean?
Who's Dean?
Dean Bragonier is the founder, and he calls himself the executive dyslexic of Noticeability. And it's an organization he founded several years ago. He is a dyslexic, and his objective is really to speak to the dyslexic potential. So often we talk about the weaknesses that come along with a learning difference like dyslexia. And, you know, there are strengths that are associated with it as well. And, you know, if you talk to Dean or look at his website, which is noticeability.org, I think, he talks about the fact that, yes, it's true, you know, half of our juvenile delinquents are dyslexic. And, you know, there's a lot of negatives that are possible. But 40% of self-made millionaires are dyslexic. 50% of our NASA employees are dyslexic. You know, 35% of entrepreneurs are dyslexic. And he's like, how do we capture these kids when they're still in school and still young and let them understand their strengths and build on those strengths so that they can become those creative, successful, competent, happy individuals? And he's actually developed a whole curriculum around that was used a little bit at Treasure Mountain last year. They had hoped to use it again this year. I think they're still in the works as to how to make that happen this year. Last year, Cheryl Henry used it at Treasure Mountain, and she thought it was great.
Yeah, so there's got to be just some tenacity then to those folks who struggle through school, right? Mm-hmm. Always feel like they don't get it, that they're dumb, that, you know.
Yeah, and I think Dean's take on that is let's notice the ability instead of the inability. And I think for so long we notice the inabilities and how difficult it is, but let's notice their abilities and work off of that. So the positive.
Right. And so is that part of some training, though, that you offer to teachers?
We don't specifically offer it. He does. And so you can work through him to become trained to do it and have these they're short programs that's like an entrepreneurship or engineering. And I've taken a look at the curriculum. It looks excellent. I think it would be easy to implement. Could even be like an after-school program through the Compass if somebody was interested in taking that on. And I think probably just working with Dean would be exciting.
Yeah. Again, that's happening, as you mentioned, at the High School Lecture Hall, 6:30, entitled The Golden Age of Dyslexia. That's an interesting title there for it. When we talk about dyslexia, I mean, is it just one? I mean, is it like Alzheimer's is to dementia as dyslexia is to reading issues? Or is it, does a lot fall under dyslexia?
I wouldn't say a lot falls under dyslexia. I would say it's a spectrum disorder. So some kids may be more profoundly affected by dyslexia than others. It also kind of depends on the makeup of that child, you know, as to whether is their executive functioning strong? Do they have a strong working memory? So there's a lot that goes into learning, and dyslexia is a piece of that. But that is the main reading disorder.
Okay.
Affecting approximately 80% of kids who are struggling to read.
Okay. Yeah, so really the major.
Yes.
Major
there
issue.
Are others, though. I always say not every kid is dyslexic. You know, just because they're struggling, let's really figure out. We really encourage parents to have a full evaluation so they can best understand why their child is struggling with reading.
Okay. You doing anything else then for Dyslexia Awareness Month?
We are. A couple things. On October 6th, we'll have our first MIND event of the year for students, and information about that's coming out this week. I know that's a little bit quick, but it still gives people time to RSVP and plan for that, and that's going to be at the National Ability Center, and the kids will do the challenge course, and then they will have we'll be talking about self-advocacy skills. Additionally, I know that about 15 teachers are going to the Wasatch Reading Summit, which is October 2nd and 3rd down in Salt Lake. PC Reads sponsored 4 of those teachers to go, so thank you to our donors who support those efforts. And Dean is also speaking there, and by bringing him to Utah, that included the speech that he'll give Monday night, as well as what he'll be able to share with teachers throughout Utah at that conference. And we are having a table at the Newcomers of Park City. They're having a nonprofit fair on October 10th. So if you'd like to meet us and learn more about us, you can stop by then. And there's also an event on October 16th at the Leo downtown, the Leonardo Museum. It's called Leo After Dark, and that is entitled A Lifelong Journey with Dyslexia. So there's a lot happening this month. Governor Hebert just declared it October Dyslexia Awareness Month for the 6th year in a row. So we're thankful for that as well.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. I think that covers it.
Okay. Alyssa Ayton, Christy March, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.